The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Happy Monday, May 21st, 2018. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show. I'm Seth Leibson. He is Chris Buskirk. Aside from having a really smart haircut, I'm going to tell you something about Chris. Something he does that's just, I don't know if I've ever said this on radio or to anyone, but just kind of a nice thing. It's a little of the past, if you will. Just a really decent thing that Chris does from time to time.
Gosh, even I want to know what this is.
I don't know what the word for it is. It's a bygone practice of great decency. And I've never properly thanked you for it. But every once in a while, you will just sua sponte, out of nowhere, order me a book and give it to me. And you've done this now several times.
Yes. You know why?
Because you think I need it.
I believe in the just because gift.
Yeah. Me too.
Yes.
I do too. I just
What's better
have
than
not
the
been
just
great
because
at
gift?
Giving
you
it.
Mentioned it. You mentioned this book in question the other day.
Yeah.
That you said, wouldn't this be great to get it? I thought, you don't have this already?
Yeah.
I found it and I ordered it. It's been out of print for a while, but I have access to the interweb.
It's made my day. Do you remember last week we were talking about memorization and that great moment where Ronald Reagan and then Secretary Bennett were off memory doing the verses of The Cremation of Sam McGee? You missed it, Bill. You missed it. It was great. Great audio we had from 1986. A press conference. Then Education Secretary Bill Bennett was doing, if you wanted to YouTube it, you could, or I could send it to you. But in any event, we could actually play it again if you wanted. But it was his unveiling of a work out of the Department of Education called What Works in Education. And at the end, Ronald Reagan was talking about the importance of memorization. And Bennett said, "You're a great memorizer. Let me test you." And they were going back and forth with verses of The Cremation of Sam McGee. Out of that, Chris Buskirk utilizes the interweb and gets me this great thing. What work? He gets me the report in bound copy. What Works in Education?
By whom?
By Bill Bennett,
By
Secretary
Bill Bennett.
And it is, it's fun. It's great. It's a lot of common sense. That's one of the funny things about this field. People say we don't talk enough about education. We'll do a little bit of it. Maybe we'll read a little of this every day for a while, because education should be a continuing thread and with summer coming, we know a lot of classes stop. They shouldn't. This is, by the way, I believe, one of the reasons there is a disparity in student outcomes. Those who stop learning in May and June and those who continue learning in May and June. This 3-month absence of learning is not good. It's not good.
Say that again?
The 3-month absence in learning, you know, when school's out.
Yeah.
It explains a lot of deficit. There is a difference between kids who take continuing education, summer school, or whose parents are dedicated to still having them study, and kids who just take it literally, or parents who just take it literally, and there's no more studying between May and or June and September.
So this is interesting. I've got a question. Would you do you think that how do you feel about just shifting gears?
Yeah.
I know that there are plenty of families, especially with younger kids, elementary school age kids. They'll keep them up on multiplication tables or phonics or things those things like that. But especially, though not exclusively, as they get older, let's say middle school and high school, even college age, young adult, shifting gears maybe to reading some books or there are practical things you could do.
This is not a worry I have in the Buskirk household. I have no doubt, right, that there is continuing education.
I'm trying to up my game here. Do you think it needs to be structured in the way that school does in order to achieve the best outcomes?
No,
or
I don't.
Or can you say, okay, this couple months we're going to do something a little different?
Right. No, I think you can supplement it. And I think more than that. Because you also know that students who do extracurricular studying that is not part of the regimented school classroom, 40-minute classroom, whatever activity, they do better. Anything does better. More is better.
Kids who, what are the examples of what
they go to tutoring or extra?
Oh, I was thinking of something different, but kids who have religious education, whether it be kids in Orthodox Jewish families or, you know, the Greek Orthodox have Greek school or, you know, other Christian denominations have their own catechism classes. They have something else where they are in a structured learning environment.
They all do better. All learning will make you better across all learning. That's one of the interesting things we learned about early STEM education, believe it or not, is it helps you not just in STEM, it helps you with other things as well. As long as you front load education and keep it going. So I think even over the summer, I think students who may enroll in summer school, to be sure this happens, but I think, you know, parents that want to invest in or take advantage of some kind of virtual learning program, the students should get credit. They should get credit so that by the next start of the fall semester of the next year, they can move on to higher courses. They can move on to further along, you know, further academic rigor. I mean, schooling should not be a 9-month, education should not be a 9-month ordeal is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about, I agree with you, obviously,
And you look at the societies really that kick our butts, they aren't 9-month education systems.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think about within our, you know, we have a 9-month school system,
right.
But that doesn't mean that's the
it's
only time you should be learning.
Right.
That's the only learning that children do. There are plenty of opportunities to do summer school. You can switch gears. You can do something if you're doing, you know, maybe do art or something during the summer. That's another type of learning. But I'm just trying to think about what are the practical ways that parents can keep their kids mentally engaged during the summer.
Funny you should ask that question as I'm leafing through this book. Did you know that? Did you know you were going to ask that leading question?
I had it.
Because the first chapter, guess what it's titled?
What?
Home.
Home is
the
where
the second chapter is classroom.
Home is where it happens.
The third
really
chapter
is
teaching and learning language skills. Fourth, teaching and learning math skills. And guess what the last chapter is?
What?
School. The
school.
Last chapter is school. And I'll tell you why. You know why. You know this. This is done, I'm sure. It's infused through the Buskirk ethic, I'm sure. But the first sentence of this book is this. It's from Secretary Brandt. Parents are their children's first and most influential teachers. What parents do to help their children learn is more important to academic success than how well off the family is or almost anything else. Parents can do many things at home to help their children succeed in school. Unfortunately, recent evidence indicates that many parents are doing much less than they might. For example, American mothers on average spend less than half an hour a day talking, explaining, or reading with their children. Fathers spend less than 15 minutes. But you can create a curriculum of the home that teaches children what matters. And you can do this through daily conversations, household routines, attention to school matters, and affectionate concern for children's progress. And then it goes on and on and with suggestions. I wonder if the audience would want us to do this, to go through some of this. I think there might be an interest in that. But anyway, interesting. On your question, home is the first chapter here. School is the last.
I will tell you something. I was actually having a discussion in a similar vein with a younger couple just a few days ago, with young kids, very young kids, and was saying that one of the most significant things, as I look back as a parent, one of the most significant things that I've done to engage our kids outside of the classroom, outside of traditional school in learning is catechizing them and
yep.
is a daily what we would call family worship or a daily devotional. It gets the whole family together, maybe 15 minutes. And when we started to do that, the kids got way more engaged. Mm-hmm. And it has. I just over time saw a difference, not just in the knowledge that they gained from doing that, but also in the way that they connected other things back to that or things that they saw in school. They were able to make a lot more connections. And something that started off where, you know, when you started off, that's always the hardest part. I think for parents who maybe haven't done it before. You're not quite sure what you're supposed to be doing. You kind of grow up your
right.
World in the
dark
a little bit.
Is this being helpful?
Is it too much?
Right.
Is it too soon? And there's always the assumption with parents, oh, their kids are going to hate this.
Yep.
They don't want to do this. They don't want to be tied down. I don't want to push them. Guess what? My experience actually has been that they really like it.
And did you worry about too soon? Because that should not be a worry. There's no such thing.
No, actually, that is something that the Fetching Mrs. Buskirk has always said from moment one, which is A, kids are sponges,
right?
Which is why we use them to clean the floor,
right?
And B is
like cats.
Laugh line.
Cats and kids are sponges.
That's number one, and number two is that they're young, not dumb. Yep.
That's right.
Right. Just because a kid is young doesn't mean that they're not capable, actually, of quite a bit if you deal with them. If you just treat them with some respect and believe that just because they're even 3 or 4 years old, they can actually get more than you think.
Absolutely. Even toddlers, it says here, who can hardly hold a crayon or pencil, are eager to write long before they acquire the skills in kindergarten that formally prepare them to read and write. Studies of very young children show that their carefully formed scrawls have meaning to them. More on that when we come back, and a lot more. I'm Seth. He's Chris. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Some beautiful songs, the lyrics just don't make sense. Sundown, you better take care. When I find you creeping around my back stairs. Sundown, you better take care. It's a beautiful song. It just doesn't mean anything.
You don't think so? I always thought that made sense.
Sundown?
I didn't. Right. It's like it's sundown. So it is sundown and some.
You know we're in trouble when you're.
Some naughtiness.
When you're understanding the lyrics to a 70s hippie
down.
Song better than I am. You know we're a hippie's love song. Hippie love song.
By the way,
our friend Steve probably understands it. He likes.
Have
all
you
that
seen?
Stuff.
There's a documentary. It's on Amazon Prime called "The Source Family." Have you seen this?
No, you have
need
me.
To see it.
You have me.
There was a restaurant in. I guess it would have been on the Sunset Strip called The Source. Sound familiar?
Yeah,
sound vaguely familiar.
Have I not been there?
Well, I don't know. I've not eaten every meal of your life with you.
I think I've been there.
It's not there anymore. It hasn't been there for many years, but it turned into a hippie cult in the 70s, and everybody changed. They all changed their names. Guy with a very questionable past changed his name to Father Yod. He owned the restaurant. Mm-hmm. Wound up killing himself in a bizarre way, which I won't spoil. It was a classic Southern California hippie cult. They had the white kind of flowy gauzy shirts, tunics, skirts, dresses. Everybody worked at the Source. It was all health food. It was a health food restaurant, and wound up buying. What was the family that owned the LA Times?
The Chamber.
You're close. What was it?
Yeah,
the cult wound up buying. The Chandlers.
Chandlers, right.
The Chandlers. They wound up buying the Chandler family mansion in Beverly Hills, and they all moved in.
Okay.
And there's tons of video because, of course, they had they had an arty type who was a videographer. This is 40 years ago, 45 years ago. So there's extensive video footage of this. You want to know a Bader Meinhof example?
Sure.
I watched this like maybe 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The Source. Did you watch last week's... I'm dying up here?
No.
Seth?
Yeah, last week's I did.
Last week's, not this week.
Right, yeah, last
so
week's.
So you know the hippie daughter of Goldie, and she's got
the drug-addled daughter, right?
There's the drug-addled daughter, and then there's the boyfriend,
whatever
the hippie guy who's kind of her Svengali.
Yeah.
And he's so smug, you kind of want to throw him out of a moving car.
Absolutely.
And he says at one point in passing, he says, let's get out of here and go down to the Source.
Did you ever see a little movie you might have heard of called Annie Hall?
I have. Yes, that's right. Woody Allen is in Goes to Eat at the Source.
That's where
in
he
Annie
shreds
Hall.
His driver's license in front of the cop.
Exactly.
He's so nervous. The cop asks him for his driver's license, and he just shreds it in front of him. He's so nervous. That's the Source parking lot.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's actually in the documentary, there's footage of them. There's footage of them filming that scene.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So that's our hippie minute for the day here on the Seth and Chris Show.
Okay. All right.
Father Yod.
Father Yod.
Father Yod was a guy. He had been in the Marine Corps. He was in the restaurant business in L.A. and Hollywood in the 50s and 60s. Had killed a couple people. Had embezzled all this money, and then started taking drugs and became a hippie cult leader. I mean, this is classic Southern California.
Our friend Steve, who likes Bob Dylan, probably knows all about this.
Probably has a The Source T-shirt.
I bet he does. If not an old menu.
A menu. Yes, yeah. Better yet.
Artichoke flambe or something. Yeah. For dessert.
Yeah. Health food circa the early 70s consisted of what? Bean sprouts?
The Good Earth restaurant.
The Good Earth, yeah. Where was that?
10 locations near you. Gosh, there's one on 44th and Camelback.
Right. You know the...
Terrible.
You know the bread.
Might as well have said.
You know the apple cider vinegar that they sell in all the stores.
Don't go out to eat here.
Bragg's apple cider vinegar.
Sure, with the mother.
With the woman with the crazy hat. Yeah. She looks like Maxine Waters, yeah. but she looks like a white grandmother with a crazy Maxine Waters.
Yeah.
She's also in this documentary. She was friends with Father Yod.
Perfect.
Right. Perfect. Oh, it's perfect. You want to talk about a slice of a particular time and place in 20th century America? This is it.
Should we cleanse the palate with a little Reagan and Bennett from 1986?
Oh, sure.
So we were talking about...
If Reagan ever ate at The Source when he was governor.
Oh, I wonder.
Probably. I'm going with no. Maybe ordered in.
I'll tell you who did. Going with yes. Probably his daughter, Patty Davis.
For sure. Yeah.
Probably invited her mother and dad to have dinner with her there.
Yeah.
Overcome a fight. I'll meet you at The Source. No thanks.
We're good. We'll go to Ciro's.
Fry some steaks in the back if you want to join us. You're always welcome. You know, there was a... Anyway, that's a different Reagan story I'll do for another time. We were talking about what works in education. This was a press conference they did in 1986, and this was just a fun Reagan moment. Reagan's handlers got all nervous about this because Bennett on the spur knew Reagan could do this. His handlers didn't, and that was right. Recite this poem from memory. Can you get us there, Bill?
Mr. President, I was telling the audience before you came that memorization figures in this book fairly prominently, and I am told that you're the world champion memorizer. Do you recall something that starts, "There are strange things done in the midnight sun"?
By the men who moil for gold.
The Arctic trails have their secret tales?
That would make your blood run cold.
I give up.
I don't know whether in school they still read Robert W. Service, but to just conclude that particular stanza,
no notes.
It would then be, "There are strange things." No, we've done that. All right.
Northern Lights. Yes.
The Northern Lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was that night in the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee.
Not bad, huh?
Pretty good off the cuff.
Off the cuff? I mean, there's a million things you're thinking about. Taking down the Soviet Union. Reykjavik. You know? A lot of things. And you just pull up the cremation of Sam McGee. Anyway, this book, What Works in Education. We'll go through it. People say we don't talk enough about education. We'll do it. Speaking of education, Bill, you were good to remind me of this. It's the year of commencements. It's the moment of commencement addresses. And I'm not going to do it this year for reasons that will become evident later, but I've often given an online commencement. I'm going to pass on it this year for other reasons. But I always do like the audience to weigh in. And this was a hugely popular show when we did it around this time last year, Chris. Remember, if they ever heard something in a commencement speech they really liked. Now, a lot of us don't remember our commencement speakers or those speeches. But we do watch a lot and go to a lot of commencement speeches. We catch... C-SPAN does them, and other places will cover them. Have you ever heard something really great in a commencement speech? When we come back, feel free to call and let us know if you did. I'll tell you my favorite line from a commencement speech, and I will tell you something that will just make you nauseous, because we do that too. We run the range of emotions here from Hillary Clinton's commencement speech. I don't think you've heard this. I didn't know she said this. I didn't know this happened. She gave a commencement speech at Yale this year. It's going to amaze you what she said. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Any commencement advice you have heard, witnessed, seen, read that you want to share? We love Bon's Mott here. So I'll tell you, I have a favorite. I think in a lot of commencement addresses I've read, it's from a strange source perhaps to you, but it was a wonderful commencement address. You can get it online. The whole thing is worth reading. From Ted Koppel in 1998 at Stanford. At Stanford. And it's his last line of the commencement address, last two lines. Aspire to decency, practice civility, admire and emulate ethical behavior. And then this is a sentence that slays me. This is the one I like the most. Apply a rigid standard of morality to your lives. And if periodically you fail, as you surely will, adjust your lives and not the standards.
Yeah, there you go.
Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that really just great? Now, it's not a commencement address. It's exactly the opposite of a commencement address. But I love this, and I know, Chris, you'll like this even better. It was an address from an address, a famous philosopher at Oxford named John Alexander Smith gave his class at the opening session of his class. May I read it to you? So the opposite of a commencement, that instead of the end of the school year, it was the beginning of the school year. May I?
Please.
You're going to like it. You're going to like it. Gentlemen, you are now about to embark on a course of study that will form a noble adventure. Let me make this clear to you. Nothing that you will learn in the course of your studies will be of the slightest possible use to you in the afterlife, save only this, that if you work hard and intelligently, you should be able to detect when a man is talking rot. And that, in my view, is the main, if not the sole, purpose of education. You should be able to detect when a man is talking rot. And that, in my view, is the main, if not the sole, purpose of education. Think about all the rot that's out there that we just kind of accept, you know? I mean, a lot. Right?
I'm thinking. Yeah, I mean,
there's
yes.
a ton of it.
Yes,
there's just,
of
I mean, it's overwhelming. It's overwhelming that we don't say 8-year-olds can decide their gender. Get out of here. I mean, that's
stop.
Yeah,
move along.
Oh, no, that's rot. Anyway, Smitty is in Scottsdale. Hi, Smitty.
Hey, how are you guys? Mine may not be as profound as Ted Koppel's, but it was Navy SEAL Admiral William McRaven speaking at the University of Texas that said, "Start your day by making your bed, so you will have accomplished something."
I love common sense advice like that. Think about how better the world would be.
During the day,
with more
you'll have challenges,
beds.
Yeah.
But we'll have made your bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Get the little things right. Start the day right. Pay attention to the small details, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Everyone wants to do the big things. Everyone wants to go change the world, you know? Heal the world.
Start by making your bed.
Yeah. Save humanity.
Tikkun Olam
Correct.
Starts with making your bed.
Exactly. How do you know Tikkun Olam? Why are you doing this to me? How do you know Chris Buskirk on Tikkun Olam?
You're the one
we
who said
know.
Heal the world.
We all know.
And you study we Hebrew all. Like Jefferson?
No, not like him.
Oh, my gosh. Well, on that, thank you, Smitty. On that, there is a Talmudic precept I've always liked, which is one is only given the opportunity for greatness once he passes the test of small things. Right? That's the point McRaven was making, I think. That's the point. You can't achieve great things until you get the small things. And it turns out maybe there are no such thing as small things. Dan Coates, boy, you don't hear enough from him. But he once said, how did he put it? He once said, I used to know this by the back of my hand, the only testing ground for the heroic is the mundane. Right? Isn't that good? The only testing ground for the heroic is the mundane. Make your bed. Who says that in a commencement address anymore? Matt Groening had a good one.
Really?
At the end of a speech. It was the very last line. And no matter what else you do in life, just remember one thing. It's not who you know. It's whom. Welcome back to the Seth and Chris Show, 602-508-0960. It's amazing how much traction this story about the escaped monkey at the San Antonio airport is getting. It's a national story. Can't get any information on the terrorist attack in Marseille, France. But boy, we're consumed with this monkey. Now, I get it. I mean, if you're in the San Antonio airport and you see a monkey running around.
Oh, God, that would be fantastic. That would make your whole trip.
But the poor monkey, he thought he was on his way to an R&R getaway vacation and ends up getting shot by a tranquilizer gun in the middle of the airport, which begged your question.
They have tranquilizer guns at the ready at the airport?
I guess. Like in Die Hard 2?
Exactly right.
With Fred Thompson. Dennis Franz.
They've got that whole
arsenal
going.
Yeah, the whole armory.
We shouldn't be surprised that there are tranquilizer guns there included in that huge cache of weapons.
in case of a monkey.
They planned ahead. Apparently there are things they know that we just don't. Oh sure, the monkey thing? Yeah, we've trained for that.
Yeah. Good Lord.
What about the cobra? Probably haven't trained for that. Or maybe...
I wouldn't underestimate
who am I to
if they're ready for a monkey.
They're ready for
Rin Tin Tin all over again.
I love that show.
What were you saying?
Went the cobra.
What were you saying about the donut hole?
Well, I do know. I'm not sure what the donut hole is, as was being referenced in that ad in the last break.
Yeah.
But I do know this: a donut without a hole is a Danish.
Is that right? Is that basically the definition of a Danish?
It's my definition. I think people would agree.
The jelly donut has no hole. Is that a Danish? Is it really a jelly Danish?
Well, it's got that hole in the front.
Yeah, a closed wound really is what it is.
Not closed, still seeping usually.
Is it?
Oh, you know what flavor the jelly donut is.
I guess that's right.
If it's seeping black, it's a blueberry or a blackberry. If it's seeping red, it's a raspberry or a cherry.
Unless they're like our colleagues here, if someone brings in donuts, people just bite in to see.
I don't like this one. Put it back. Yeah. It's kind of like the Valentine's Day candy.
Yeah.
How do you find the ones you like? Well, don't look at the little legend that's printed on the bottom. Yeah. No, just bite in.
Just bite in. Go right
to it. Put back the ones you don't prefer.
This is incredible.
Or actively dislike.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Good. We got that.
We're good on that.
I didn't mean to give you short shrift.
No, we're giving full shrift to the Valentine's Day candy.
Okay. We're good at it.
Is that worse than double dipping? The biting and the putting back?
I have always assumed that the double dipping...
Or is it a subset of
no,
double
it's
dipping?
No, it's not. I think double dipping is overblown. And the reason I think that is I always thought that there was
an... It's a fake crisis.
Well, it's a fake crisis. There's an antiseptic action by the dip. It's like a bar of soap. It cleans itself, doesn't it? You don't have to worry about bacteria on a bar of soap. It's self-clean.
We don't know this. I don't know this. I've always wondered.
Yeah.
You suppose that's true. How do you get a bar of soap?
It's going to wash your hands. Why would it be dirty?
Maybe there's something we don't know. If you get some bacteria or dirt or something on soap, does it simply repel bacteria
and
dirt?
That's what I'm thinking. It must.
Or.
Depending on the surfactant level.
Or, yeah, dirty soap. Is that a contradiction in terms?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
I've always wondered.
Well, we're here for you. That's why we're here. Can I go to the Yale commencement address that Hillary gave now?
Well, between the two, is there such a thing as dirty soap or listening to Hillary speak at Yale?
Dirty soap.
I think most people
let's call it dirty soap.
Let's dig into the dirty soap issue.
It is dirty soap. This is really incredible. I had not seen the full transcript. Paul Mierengroff brought it out over at Powerline. He says, I've heard all kinds of commencement speeches, this kind, that kind, rags to riches, advice. even heard a commencement speech devoted to heaping praise on the college president. But I've never heard a commencement speech in which the speaker whined about a defeat and provided updates on how she's coping with it. Listen to this. First of all, you know that she stopped thinking a long time ago, because how many times have you heard this line? How many times have you heard the line I'm about to read you that she gave to the Yale graduates? Quote, "I remember the first months after that 2016 election were not easy. We all had our own methods of coping."
No, they were pretty easy. I mean, except for those of us who just had permagrin and were starting to get cramps.
Those of us who weren't in her we. Her group of we.
I assume
they don't have her agency, to use your construction.
Agency all over the place.
"We all had our own methods of coping. Quote, long walks in the woods, hours going down a Twitter rabbit hole,
can we stop there?
Of Chardonnay."
You know, that's very super self-referential. You know that there were those, she would go for these walks by their house in, what's the place in New York?
Yeah, Passapaquoddy.
Yes, right there. And there were people who would go out and try and find her on these long walks. I assume they were staged, and then they'd take selfies with her and then tweet them out.
Of course they were.
Right?
Of course.
Could you be more self-referential?
Well, how about this? Hours going down a Twitter rabbit hole and my fair share of Chardonnay. This is like the 80,000th time she's talked about her Chardonnay.
Right, especially since we know she probably likes whiskey.
So even that has been poll tested, probably. Chardonnay polls better than vodka.
And Maker's Mark.
Yeah, or Maker's Mark.
Seems like a Jim Beam gal to me, though.
Whatever it is, she talks an awful lot about her drinking, which I think says something. I mean, it's in every speech now. It's in every speech. Anyway, she goes on. "No, I'm not over it. I still think about the 2016 election." She's assuming that everyone in Yale is on her side. 80% probably are. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. But this kind of assumption. This gets to the earlier point we were making about the double standard. The Democrat. Who was that great caller we had, Chris, who said the Democrat walks into a room full of strangers and assumes everyone's on their side and has no problem talking politics? The Republican walks into a room of strangers and assumes no one's on their side and doesn't like bringing up politics. Who gave that to us?
I don't know, but they deserve credit because it's
Was it Amy Wax? Was it Amy Wax? It might have been Amy Wax.
Well, it could be.
Anyway, she goes, "I still regret the mistakes I made. I still think, though, that understanding what happened in such a weird and wild election in American history will help us defend our democracy in the future." Weird and wild, because she didn't win. It took Clinton less than 2 minutes to bring up the 2016 election during her commencement.
No, oh, a new record.
And then she said, "I mean, if you can't beat them, join them." And do you know what she did?
She voted for Trump and threw on a MAGA hat?
She whipped out a Russian hat. And put a Russian hat on.
Are you kidding me?
I'm not. Look it up. Google it. If you can't beat them, join them.
Wow.
Take a look.
Unbelievable.
Mirrengoff had a great line. She could have saved the money and just pulled out her earlier prop, her Russian reset button. That was hers.
Yeah.
That was hers. Russian hat. If you can't beat them, join them. Can you imagine? That is just bitterness on stilts. Allegations of a conspiracy that is now in its second year of investigation, of which not one iota of evidence presents itself.
Well, there was corruption and collusion. It just happened to be the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the Hillary Clinton campaign and the Democrat National Committee. Laws broken. People must go to jail.
Oh, do you have to read? Do you have to read?
There are more than 18,000 children in Arizona's foster care system, and there is a critical need for foster families to care for these children all across our great state. When you foster a teen, you won't just change their life, they'll change yours forever. You want to know a few reasons to foster teens? You can provide them family dinners and a sense of well-being for somebody who's never had them. You can provide them a home to come back to after they get off to college. You can make a difference and even see the impact that you've made as your teen grows and matures. Give the children a chance. These children need an adult. They need adult supervision. They need guidance, instruction, structure at home, and life skills that they've missed out on. Normal everyday life and involvement with these children will be good for them and good for you. Taking care of them, loving them, and providing a safe, secure place. If you want to find out about more about this, contact teensneedyou.org. That's teensneedyou.org.
You know, we're going into closing in on Memorial Day, which is a important, solemn, and somber day. I was just thinking about, you know, our segments where we teach what used to be taught, not what Dennis does, which is what isn't taught, but what used to be taught. And I was put in mind of a talk Theodore Roosevelt gave in Arlington Cemetery in 1902. And given a lot that was discussed on the show today, I just thought I might close with this from TR. What we need most in this republic is not special genius, not unusual brilliancy, but the honest and upright adherence on the part of the mass of the citizens and of their representatives to the fundamental laws of private and public morality, which are now what they have been during recorded history. Think about that when you think about that John Alexander Smith quote about the chief purpose of education is to know when a man is talking rot. Think about that. We don't need special genius. We don't need pseudo-sophisticated intellectuals, and we don't need pseudo-intellectual sophisticates. A lot of damage has been done by them. A lot of damage has been done by those. No. We need what Michael Novak once called an army of 300 million. An army of 300 million. Honest and upright adherence of the citizenry and their representatives to the fundamental laws of private and public morality, which are now what they have been during recorded history. Till tomorrow, class is dismissed.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.